Good evening. It's Monday evening, July 27th. This is Rabbi Feldman's shiur. Tonight's shiur is on Inyanei Tisha B'Av.
Thank you very much. At the moment, there is a fast schedule for this Wednesday night. We hope things might change, but that's what's scheduled at the moment. And the fast of Tisha B'Av, as we know from our experience, is one that is treated differently than the other Tanaishim, including the other Tanaishim that are grouped together with it. The whole experience of the Churban HaBayis is marked by a set of four Tanaishim, which are all identified a little bit obliquely by the Pasuk in Zechariah. And this grouping includes not only Tisha B'Av, but also Shavasa B'Tamuz, the Sar B'Tevis, and Tzom Gedalia. But Tisha B'Av, as we know, in practice is very different from the other fast days. The other fast days are observed in a much more scaled-down fashion, only during the daytime. And all that we abstain from on, let's say, Shavasa B'Tamuz is only eating and drinking. And on Tisha B'Av, so we have a 25-hour fast, and it's also more intense during those hours. We're not only prohibited from eating and drinking, but all of the five inuyim, the five afflictions that we find on Yom Kippur, for example, of eating and drinking and anointing and wearing shoes and bathing and marital relations, all of those are all prohibited on Tisha B'Av as well. So why is it that Tisha B'Av is treated in a more severe fashion than the other fast days? It would seem they should be treated the same way. So on one level, the Gemara explains. The Gemara explains because there is intensity to Tisha B'Av that is different. The Gemara has the expression, Shiny Tisha B'Av, Ho'o V'Huchblu V'Hatzaris. That Tisha B'Av is different. It sounds like that phrase means that the tragedies of Tisha B'Av were multiplied. So initially reading that, it sounds like that means that there were many bad things that happened on Tisha B'Av. Not just one thing, but many things happened. The problem with that interpretation, as we could perhaps guess, and as Tosfos notes, is that that's true as well about Shavasa B'Tamuz. The Mishnah tells us a whole list of things that happened on Tisha B'Av, but a whole list of things that happened on Shavasa B'Tamuz as well. So if we're going to interpret this phrase, Huchpula Bohacharis, as meaning that there were many bad things that happened, so then that would be true about Tisha B'Av and Shavasa B'Tamuz, and perhaps other days also. So therefore, we have to add a little bit to this explanation. So Tosfos gives us two theories what this means. We'll come back to this a little bit later, but Tosfos suggests either it means that Tisha B'Av is special because it's not really a quantitative issue, but it's a qualitative issue. The shiny Churban Beis HaMikdash, the Chomer say that the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash is by its very nature a more severe tragedy than what happened on the other days. And the other answer Tosfos gives is that, yes, it is quantitative. It is about how many things happened. But it's the fact that the same thing happened more than once. Ho v'huch v'lubo sara achas. The fact that you have the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash happening not once, but twice, that gives Tisha B'Av its extra severity. So two suggestions in Tosfos as to what this sentence in the Gemara means, that Tisha B'Av is more severe and therefore it gets a little bit of a more severe treatment. Hi. So let's come back to that. I think I know what you're getting at. I think there is a link there, but we'll come back to that in a few minutes. It's an important point. So that explains just a little bit thematically why Tisha B'Av is treated differently. But in terms of the mechanics, in terms of how does it work, that Tisha B'Av has a different structure. So that we find a number of different theories. And there is a prominent theory that the Ramban suggests. The Ramban is quoted by the Ran in his commentary to Rosh Hashanah. And it's found in the Ramban's writings known as Torah Sa'adam. He has a sefer on Avelus, where he talks about Avelus both in the personal sense and also in the public sense. So the public Avelus for the period of the 3 weeks. So the Ramban talks there about that as well. And there the Ramban expresses a theory as to why it is that Tisha B'Av is different. And his theory is based on a passage the Gemara has in the Sechas Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara picks up on this pasuk that we mentioned, the pasuk in Zechariah, that lists the fast days, or that refers to them. It says, Tzom HaRaviv, Tzom HaChamishi, it's a very broad reference, but the fast of the fourth month, the fast of the fifth month, etc., etc., ultimately, you, Lebeis Yehuda, L'Shoshan, L'Shimcha, will ultimately be days of celebration. So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and Daf Yud Ches asks, really, that's terrific, so when's that going to be? I prefer that. So when is it going to be that the fast days are going to be holidays? So the Gemara says, well, it depends. that if we have a situation of shalom, so then the fast days will be observed as holidays. Now, what does shalom mean? It's always an elusive concept. Right? What does shalom mean? We tend to assume that it means something eschatological, something associated with the Mashiach, the Beis HaMikdash, something like that, something that we clearly have not yet obtained. You see in the Rishonim different interpretations of what the Gemara might mean when it refers to Shalom. When we talk about this concept, we tend to assume it refers to Mashiach, Beis HaMikdash, or something like that. That's one possibility. When it's not a time of Shalom, but it's a time of Shmad, it's a time of persecution, so then the fast days are to be observed as fast days. However, there's also a middle ground. There is a time, perhaps much of history, when it won't be a time of shalom, but it's also not a time of absolute persecution. So says the Gemara, during that time, so then the fast days are optional. Ratzu mis'anin, ratzu ein mis'anin. We want, we can fast. We don't want to, we don't have to fast. So says the Ramban, that's the key. Now we are now, for the purposes of considering ourselves to be in the same time period as the Ramban, we're stretching a long time here, but we are now in an in-between period that's not Shmad and that's not Shalom. So therefore, the fast days are essentially optional. So in his explanation, that's the key, because says the Ramban, if we want to look at a fast day, we want to find out what a fast day is, so we could look to the Torah. The only model of a fast day that we find in the Torah really is Yom Kippur. So therefore, what is a fast day? A fast day is a full-blown 25-hour experience that involves all five Inuyim. So that's really what a fast day is, and that's what Shirasa B'Tamas should be, and Asar B'Tavis, and some Gedalia also should all be treated that way. So why is it that they're not treated that way? Because they're optional. Because nowadays, we don't really have to fast on these days. So before we get too excited, we do fast on these days because the Jewish people as a whole have accepted these days as fast days. But if we're doing them voluntarily, so we're not looking to have five Yom Kippur a year, so we're going to accept it in a more modified version. We're willing to fast during the daytime, and we'll abstain from eating and drinking. That's what it refers to. It's the whole package we didn't want to take on ourselves. So says Ramban, that's what's going on here, that really Tisha B'Av is not really special. Tisha B'Av is essentially the default position. That's what a fast day is. The other fast days are reduced because they're optional. So why can't Tisha B'Av be optional also? Because, says the Gemara, that's where the statement comes in. Huf below Bohasaris, Tisha B'Av is set aside because of its special intensity. So Tisha B'Av has no middle ground. There's no black and white. Tisha B'Av, either it's a holiday or it's a fast day. But those are only two options. The other fast days have the optional version. So therefore, Tisha B'Av, we have to wait till it becomes an absolute yontif before we can change it. So Tisha B'Av is the full-blown Yom Kippur model. And the other Ta'anesim, they're optional, we modify them. So that's the way the Ramban understands what's going on. Not everyone agreed with the Ramban. It's a very well-known position, but not everyone accepted it. Among those who disagreed is the Nitziv of Elazin, in his commentary to the Shild, which is called Emek Shala. So the Nitziv has a long essay where he questions the Ramban completely. He brings many proofs from Tanakh, where he tries to prove the point that there is a concept of a partial day fast, that it's not such a foreign idea, that it makes sense, according to him, to say that Shavasta B'Tamas is what it always was, that there's no reason necessarily to assume that it was a different model and that we scaled it down. The Shavasta B'Tamas is observed the same way in his understanding as it always was. He has a number of other questions. One of the perhaps most pressing questions one could ask on the Ramban's position is, Halavaya should be the case. It's not always the case, certainly not always the case since the time of the Ramban, that there has not been a situation of Shmad. There certainly have been times when we would have to say that it is a situation of Shmad, it is a situation of extreme persecution. So if the Ramban is correct, so during those periods, Rahman al-Islam, so those should be times when the fast day should be observed in their full format. Now, it could be that maybe the reason we don't see that is because it's a little bit of a challenging premise, because it's after those times when it's hardest to observe the fast days, and maybe the theory they apply, and we just don't see people able to pull that off. But maybe the Ramban is right in theory, but the fact that we don't see this in practice is a little bit of a question on this premise, that the situation of Shmad should make Shavasa V'Tamas, for example, observed in a Tisha B'Av type of format. Indeed, the Magen Avraham writes from the side of Pesach Shulchan Aruch And Baal Nefesh Yachmer, somebody who is sensitive to these things, perhaps it should be Machmer to treat these Tanishim in that way. There is a little bit of a literature about it, and the Chassid Lazman makes a reference to such an idea during the Holocaust years. But for the most part, this hasn't been something that we're aware of that being practiced. So that's also a little bit of a question on the Ramban's presentation. So if we don't take the Ramban's approach, we come from a different way. So then what we're essentially saying, as the Nitziv expresses, is that really it's not that Tisha B'Av is the default. The default is whatever it is, and Shabbos V'Tammuz is normal, and Asar B'Tavish is normal. Tisha B'Av is enhanced. And that's what we mean. Hukbul B'Hatzar is Tisha B'Av is souped up. So what does that mean? Why should it be? Where does Tisha B'Av get its enhancement from? So here that leaves us actually with two possibilities, two possible sources, two possible models to explain why it should be that Tisha B'Av should have this enhanced quality to it. And if we look at the extra components of Tisha B'Av, we look at these other practices that we have in addition to abstaining from eating and drinking, so we find two options as to where that could come from. So one option, perhaps might be a little bit more indicated, where we see everything besides the prohibition of eating and drinking, is Avelus, Rachman Lutzlan, somebody sitting Shiva, so everything besides not eating and drinking, everything else that's observed on Tisha B'Av is observed by an Avel. So that seems like a very reasonable possibility, that Tisha B'Av is essentially a fast day plus Avelus, fast day plus Shiva practices, all being observed together. And maybe that's what gives Tisha B'Av its extra intensity. Every other fast day is just a fast day, and Tisha B'Av is a fast day and a day of national Avelus that has the practices of Shiva in a public sense. Hi. Mm-hmm. That's what it sounds like. I mean, again, that's one of the questions on the Ramban, that it sounds like if we follow his theory, the logical conclusion would be that if it's a situation of persecution, so they should be observed fully, it should be observed like Tisha B'Av. Now, the answer to that could be Nechanami, maybe it should be, or the answer could be that's a question. So there are different ways to look at that, and one could argue that maybe that should be the practice, but empirically we don't see that to be the case from what we know. Not 100%, but it doesn't seem to be that that's the case, so that's a kind of a practice-type question on the Ramban's theory. So if we take a different approach, that Tisha B'Av is enhanced, not normal, but enhanced, so it could be because it's Avelus. It could be that it has Avelus grafted onto its character, and that's what gives it the extra prohibitions. Alternatively, we could say a little bit differently. We could say that it's not necessarily Avelus, but there's another source in Halacha for not all, but most of the practices of Tisha B'Av. It's not as a perfect fit as Avelus is, but in Kippur we find many of these prohibitions observed. So maybe the idea is that Tisha B'Av, and this is perhaps the way that the Sefer Achinuch seems to express it, that maybe Tisha B'Av is a day when we basically have a negative yontif quality. There is not just a tainish, but it's a yontif in the sense. We know it's called a moed, but different clearly from all the other moedim. Normally we have a positive atmosphere. Normally we're commemorating something good. Tisha B'Av has a negative quality that is in the day itself. And this is what you're alluding to, I believe, that we have this history, which the Gemara tells us that Tisha B'Av, Magalgu and Chavi Yom Chai, Tisha B'Av is a day which has a tragic history throughout, going all the way back to the Meraglim. And Kadosh Baruch Hu told the Jewish people when they cried upon getting the report of the Meraglim, so Akash Baruch Hu said, Hashem b'chisham b'chia shalchinam, so you're crying for no reason, so in the ekfalachem b'chia l'dorosh, I will establish for you a crying for many generations that's going to come out of this. So there is an idea that going back way further in history, and since then, Tisha B'Av has so far, Halavai will change, but Tisha B'Av has so far had a negative character built into the day itself. So perhaps that's something that is unique, but it's not simply that we are observing a commemoration of something, but the day itself has this quality that's forcing a certain character to it. So we'll look to the Yom Kippur model to see how do we observe a negative yontif, so to speak. How do we observe a yontif that's not about oneg and simcha, but it's about something else? So Yom Kippur would seem to be the model, and therefore these extra inuyim that would be observed on Tisha B'Av, maybe it's not necessarily coming from an Avelus place, maybe it's coming from a Yom Kippur place as a model for an enhanced Tainish commemorative day. Dalia Levine is a Tana Chacham from Lakewood, the author of the Sfarim Divrei Shira, So he suggested that perhaps these two approaches that we just mentioned, you could find them really hinted at in the two answers in Tosfos that we mentioned before. That if we say that the severity of Tisha B'Av comes from the intensity of the Churban, Shani Churban Beis HaMikdash the Chametzvei, so maybe that's a way of expressing that Avelus is the dominant theme in Tisha B'Av, that Tisha B'Av is driven by the intense character of what happened and the fact that we are still in the midst of that situation, we still are without a Beis HaMikdash, so maybe that's a way of saying that Avelus is really what Tisha B'Av is about. While the second answer, the idea that finds some significance in saying the Shiny Churban Beis HaMikdash, the Hukbu Bo Tzara'achas, the same thing happened twice. So what's the significance of the same thing happening twice? Why should that matter? Because it's a way of saying that there's a pattern. It's a way of saying that something happens twice. That's a way of indicating there's something characteristic about the day. And we know that we talk about the term of a chazaka. So we normally identify a chazaka when something happens three times. But when it comes to tragedy, so when it comes to death, so we don't require three times, two times is already considered a chazaka. So perhaps this is what Tosfos is telling us, that based on Mikdash being destroyed twice, that is a chazaka, that there's something very significant about this day, and that's what we're responding to. It's interesting, there was a suggestion also that perhaps you could find this being referred to in another passage. The Talmud tells us in Mishnah Megillah that Rebbe, the author of the Mishnayos, that Rebbe wanted to be Oker Tisha B'Av. Rebbe, apparently, language sounds like he wanted to cancel Tisha B'Av. So that's a very jarring idea. And Tosfos asks it in a technical way, but we ask it in a more emotional way. Wasn't Rebbe Jewish? Didn't Rebbe mourn the Beis HaMikdash? Didn't he feel this was something that's a tragedy? You know, the way Tosfos asked it, the Kash from Gemara, doesn't we say that, Kol Hamzabal al Yishlayim Zoch Avroch Mechmasa? Don't we believe that he has to be sensitive to this? Tosfos finds it impossible to believe that he really wanted to forget about Tisha B'Av. Tosfos gives two suggestions as to what the sentence means. When the Gemara says Rebbe wanted to get rid of Tisha B'Av, Tosfos says two ways in which we could understand this in a less extreme fashion. Either that he didn't want to cancel it, but he wanted to make it more normal. That he didn't think it should be observed in a different form than Shavuot Shavatamas and Asar B'Tethis. That he wanted to observe this above the same way we do the other Tanation. Shouldn't have the Chumras, the special distinguishing severity. If this above that, he didn't want to necessarily give it. That was one answer Tosfos gives. The second answer Tosfos gives is that it's not that he wanted to get rid of it, he wanted to move it. That he agreed with Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara tells us in Masechet Tainis that Rabbi Yochanan was of the opinion he had said that Almoli Havoy Hashem, if I had been there at the time of the establishment of Tisha B'Av, I would have made it a different day. I would have had it on the 10th of Av. I don't think it should be observed on the 9th of Av. Because Rubo Shohecho, in this Rav, the Gemara tells us that most of the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on the 10th, so therefore Rabbi Yochanan would have had it on the 10th. So Tosfos says that's what Rebbe really was getting at. That Rebbe didn't want to forget about it. Of course, he wants to mourn the Yishalayim. He wanted to have it on the 10th of Av. That answer is very difficult. As the Tori Evan points out, and the Vilna Gaon points out, there is a huge question you could ask about that. It's directly against the Gemara that is commenting on. Because the Gemara itself discusses this question of what could Rebbe possibly want. It's hard to believe. So the Gemara itself gives an answer, which is completely at odds with what Tosfos says. The Gemara says that, no, Rebbe didn't want to get rid of Tisha B'Av. Rather, it was talking about one of those years, there's many of these years, one of those years when Tisha B'Av fell out on Shabbos. So our practice is to observe Tisha B'Av on the 10th of Av in those years, to observe it on the Sunday. So Rebbe's opinion, according to Gemara there, was, let's not do that. Once it's been pushed away from its real day, let's forget about it. So as the Gemara, the Tori Evan points out, so how does Tosfos work with that? So according to Tosfos, Rebbe wanted to establish Tisha B'Av on the 10th of Av. And according to the Gemara, when we observe Tisha B'Av on the 10th of Av, Rebbe said, let's forget it. So he wanted to always be in the 10th of Av. You think he should be happy that once in a while when it actually is observed in the 10th of Av. And according to Gemara, he wanted to say, no, if you have to push it off to the 10th, then don't have it. So how does that match at all? So I saw once in the Sefer Avnei Shoam, by Nachum Eisenstadt, he wanted to suggest as follows. That what was the debate between Rebbe and his colleagues? That Rebbe felt that the real driving force of Tisha B'Av is the Avelus. That's really what it's about. And the only thing that would give Tisha B'Av an extra severity is the quality of mourning, of Avelus. So Rebbe felt, since it's without Avelus, it should be on the 10th of Av. because the 10th of Av is when most of the destruction took place. That's a more appropriate time to observe it. So Rebbe said, I voted to be on the 10th of Av. Now, you disagree with me. My colleagues don't agree. They want to have it on the 9th. So that's what Tosus is addressing. Tosus says, you want to have it on the 9th? So Rebbe said, then don't have all the chumras, because the chumras come from Avelus. If you want to have it on the Avelus day, on the 10th, fine. If you just want to mark the 9th of Av, so mark the 9th of Av the same way you mark the 17th of Tammuz. Don't have all the severity that's associated with it. And then the second answer in Tosus, so Rebbe is saying, so if it's about marking the 9th of Av, that's what my colleagues seem to feel is the driving force. So that's not portable. You can't do that on a different day. Either it's going to be on the 9th of Av or it won't be on the 9th of Av. So according to me, it should always be on the 10th of Av. But according to you, my colleagues, you think it should be on the 9th, so then you can't move that to the 10th. You have to have it on the right day. If it was up to me, I'd always have it on the 10th. But I don't agree with moving something from the 9th to the 10th. That doesn't make sense. That's how he explained this machlokus between Rebbe and his colleagues as reflecting this issue of what really is the driving force behind the severity of Tisha B'Av. So why, Taka, do we not have Tisha B'Av on the 10th? Why do we observe it on the 9th? So here the Gemara gives us a little bit of an answer. The Gemara says that we picked the Chilasa, the Pornos Adifa, that is a preference for the initiating moment of the tragedy. The Achronim flesh that out a little bit more. The Achronim add a little bit to this, where they suggest that there's also an element here, based on the Gemara Masachas Lezar, the Gemara comments, based on the idea of Volva Fishim Vechilaluha, that the invaders came into the Beis HaMikdash and they defiled it. So from the moment of the initial breaking in, so there was already no more Kedusha, no more sanctity of the Beis HaMikdash. And the expression has it, Bayish Sarif Sarif, that what burnt afterwards was a burnt building, was already destroyed. So there was more burning to take place, but that is meaningless as far as we're concerned, because the loss of the access and the loss of the sanctity already took place in the first moment. So however much of the percentage of the burning was taking place the next day, we're not interested in that. We're interested in the loss of our connection to the Makom Kadosh. So that was already the 9th of Av, that's what they felt. Some point out that the famous Kasha that they note, it sounds a little bit technical, but it may be very relevant to understanding some of the theme of Tisha B'Av. They point out that there's a little bit of a contradiction here, that Rabbi Yochanan is the one who wanted to have it on the 10th of Av. So you might be familiar, there's a position of Rabbi Yochanan in a well-known machlokes in the laws of damages. The Gemara in the second paragraph of Bava Kamma has a debate about how do we understand the liability that one has if he starts a fire, and the fire damages something else. So we know that's one of the avos nezikin, that's one of the primary causes of liability. A person is responsible for the fires that he sets. The question is, what's the nature of that responsibility? The Maharaj Machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, how do we view that? Do we say Eishav Mishum Chitzav? Do we say that fire should be viewed like an arrow? Or do we say Eishav Mishum Mamono, which should be viewed like property? What's the difference? And there's different ways to understand this difference, but just one way to phrase it, that the arrow, the idea of an arrow is if I shoot an arrow, so it takes a few seconds for the arrow to get somewhere, but it's clear that I did the action directly. There's a time lapse between when I do my action and when the damage takes place, but we understand the damage traces back to my action of shooting an arrow. Of course, in modern-day weaponry, so we have much more of a timeline, so it's easy to understand the difference more significantly, but with an arrow it only takes a few seconds no matter what. But those few seconds are illustrative of the fact that there could be a time lag between when I do something and when it happens, but it's clear the responsibility is going to go back to when I shot the arrow. The second possibility is the idea that it's mishum mamono, that we treat fire like property. So if a person, it's like a person's ox. A person lets his ox roam around free, so the ox could wander around for several hours, and it finally finds the china shop 6 hours later and does damage then. So that's my liability, it's my responsibility, but no one's going to say that that's an action that I did at the time. That's a liability, it traces back to me because I wasn't careful with my ox. So if I set a fire, so do we view it as my property that got out of control, or do we view it as an action that I did directly when I lit the fire? So Rabbi Yochanan holds Mishum Chitzav, that it's based on the action that I do at that moment. So Avnei Nezer and others raise the question, so why does Rabbi Yochanan want to fast on the 10th? That the Beis HaMikdash was burnt, the whole nature of liability that we have for fire is when the fire is initially lit. It all goes back to that moment. So then we should focus on the 9th, rather than looking to the majority of the damage or the after effect of the continuing flames. That's a later result. That shouldn't be the focus. So some of this farm explained. I think the Zevin talks about this. Others talk about this as well. that's true in terms of blaming the aggressor, in terms of blaming the mazik. So when do we hold him liable? He did his damage when he set the fire. But when is the object damaged? When is the burnt object lost? It's lost when the fire actually burns it. So if I burn something, if I start a fire today and it burns something tomorrow, so I'm liable today, but the item is lost the next day. And that's very important when we talk about Tisha B'Av. So somebody made a statement a few years ago that the Orthodox Jews have too much of a focus on victimhood. They have the 3 weeks and the 9 days. They focus too much on victimhood. It's not the way we should be. So if we look at the keynotes, we look at any of the liturgy for Tisha B'Av, we don't talk about victimhood at all. We don't talk about what they did to us, what the terrible people, invaders that they did to us. We talk about our own liability. We talk about our own lack of worthiness. So we are without a base on mikdash because of our own avers. There's no reference whatsoever to any blaming any mazik for what anybody did to us. So that's Rabbi Yochanan's point. Rabbi Yochanan is saying that even though I think the mazik is chayiv on the ninth, but I'm not interested in the mazik. I'm interested in what we lost. We lost the base on mikdash in his view on the tenth. And apparently Chazal agreed with that in theory. They just feel that, as the Achronim were explaining, the loss of the Kedusha was on the ninth, so we'll focus on the ninth. And Rabbi Yochanan said we'll focus on the tenth. Okay. I assume it's the ninth. That's the tradition that we have. I don't know if there's any significance to the tenth in that particular story, as far as I know. So this gives us, again, two perspectives to look at what is it that drives the severity of Tisha B'Av. Is it this element of Avelus, or is it the element of the ninth of Av having a special character to it that is inherent in the day that we recognize and that we observe? So what difference does it make practically? It could make a difference in a couple of cases. For example, so we'll start with something that comes up often enough, not this year, but comes up many other years, as we mentioned, Tisha B'Av falling out on Shabbos. And exactly how often, but it seems to happen pretty often. And Tisha B'Av is observed on Sunday very often, because there's only 4 days it can be, and two of them are Sunday and Shabbos pushed off to Sunday. So we very often have Tisha B'Av on Sunday. Usually it's because it fell out on Shabbos, so it's actually on Sunday is more rare. But when Tisha B'Av falls on Shabbos, so we observe it on Sunday. So there is a question that the Sfarim talk about. So what does that mean, that we observe Tisha B'Av on Sunday? Does that mean that we've actually picked up Tisha B'Av and we've moved it, that the ninth of Av that year is not Tisha B'Av at all, or it's not the observance of Tisha B'Av at all, it's the Shabbos, and Tisha B'Av is fully moved to the tenth? Or do we say, no, Tisha B'Av is the recognition of the ninth of Av. You can't move that, like Rebbe was trying to say. Tisha B'Av is on Shabbos. But we can't fast on Shabbos. And we can't do certain other things on Shabbos. So we'll move the observance, we'll move the public observance and the fast. That will move to Sunday. But Tisha B'Av is really taking place on Shabbos. So what difference does that make, that theoretical question? So that matters for a couple of things. For example, we have a rule, the person is in Avelus, so Yeshiva is not observed in a public way, Avelus is not observed in a public way on Shabbos, but Dvarim Shivat Sina are noed, things that take place in private are observed on Shabbos as well. So if Shabbos is Tisha B'Av, so maybe Dvarim Shivat Sina should also be observed. For example, prohibition against marital relations on Tisha B'Av maybe should be observed on Shabbos as well. So this is a debate, the Torah quotes, this is a Machlokas HaRishonim, seems to go around this question of whether Tisha B'Av is Shabbos, the Shabbos is Tisha B'Av, or do we say, no, it's not Tisha B'Av at all, the whole observance is moved to the next day. A related question has to do with the prohibition of Talmud Torah. So we assume there should be a prohibition of Talmud Torah on Shabbos, Tisha B'Av. So that's also a tricky question because there's actually three possibilities. Because it could be that we see it like Tisha B'Av and we should prohibit Talmud Torah. Or maybe we should say we see it as not connected to Tisha B'Av and we should allow Talmud Torah. There's an in-between possibility as well. We could also see it as Erev Tisha B'Av. Because Erev Tisha B'Av, it's possible there's also a problem with Talmud Torah. It's a little bit of a question how much that's observed. In the book Michael Ben Siv, which became very controversial, so it wasn't controversial for this. It says there a story about the Beis Halevi, that the Beis Halevi was commenting that everyone thinks I'm such a machmir, I'm so stringent. There's a list of things I'm making on, certain things I'm lenient about. One of the things he was making on is you're allowed to learn on Erev Tisha B'Av. Others prohibited learning on Erev Tisha B'Av, but the concern is that the enjoyment of the learning is going to spill over into Tisha B'Av itself. And basically, Levi said he allows it. So, without getting into the question, what the practice in terms of Erev Tisha B'Av, so maybe Shabbos should be seen as Erev Tisha B'Av. So that was a third possibility. So there is a debate. The Klausenberger Rebbe has a long tshuva about this, where he suggests other elements. There's a lot to say about this. But this whole question of how should Shabbos be treated in terms of both the Dvarim Shabbatin in general and the concept of Talmud Torah will at least connect to this question. Is it Tisha B'Av and just we're pushing off the fast? Or is it not Tisha B'Av at all? And we've moved that whole observance to the 10th of Av completely. It's also, the Acharonim also discussed a somewhat less common relevant issue, but at least in theory it's interesting. Let's say a person becomes a bar mitzvah. A person turns 13 on the 10th of Av. So his first day of obligation in mitzvah is the 10th of Av that year. So we could say that, okay, so that's his first mitzvah. Fasting on Tisha B'Av, not a great way to start, but that's the first mitzvah. Or maybe we should say, no, maybe the 10th of Av is the makeup day for everyone who was supposed to fast on the 9th and couldn't because it was Shabbos. So this bar mitzvah boy was a cotton and he wasn't obligated to fast on the 9th, so therefore maybe he's not obligated in the makeup day as well. Again, but aside the fact that it's kind of a precise situation to come up, it's also hard to imagine that we're not going to tell this boy at this age ready to practice anyway, the chinuch from something. And Rav Nassim Gestetner points out in his shivas also, since we believe the 10th of Av also has its own significance, so if everyone's fasting on the 10th of Av, however we characterize it, it's likely the promise of voice is fast also, at least on theory, in theory, on some level, seems to connect to this case. Another impact that it would have that's a little more relevant is the question of, we now know right now we're in the most severe, until Tisha B'Av, the most severe period. We have the period of the 3 weeks, and then we have the period of the 9 days. We start to get a little bit more into what the Mishnah actually talks about already, and the most severe period is what we've been in since Shabbos, the period known as the Shua Shechalbo Tisha B'Av. Shua Shechalbo is treated really, at least in theory, even more severely than the 9 days. In practice, we treat most of the 9 days like Shua Shechalbo, but on paper, Shua Shechalbo is the most intense period. So when Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos, so it's a question when Shavuot Shechalbo is. The two opposite possibilities. Either Tisha B'Av is Shabbos, so therefore the entire preceding week has a status of Shavuot Shechalbo, or Tisha B'Av is Sunday, in which case there's essentially no Shavuot Shechalbo because the whole week is Sunday. So two opposite possibilities, the longest possible Shavuot Shechalbo or the shortest possible Shavuot Shechalbo is also going to depend on this question of what is the status of that Shabbos that Tisha B'Av is occupying. There was a day, we don't have this practice, there was a day that Shavuot Shechalbo actually includes the rest of the week after Tisha B'Av. So that would still be a major nafka mina, but it would still be a week long. The question though, would it be the previous week, would it be the following week? But we don't observe that in practice. So either way, it would make a difference to figure out which week are we talking about. Are we talking about the week up to Shabbos or the week starting from Sunday? This question in general of what characterizes the Inuyim, what characterizes these extra prohibitions in addition to eating and drinking. So that there's also more discussion about all surrounding this question really of what is it that's driving them. The Briska Rav has a complicated discussion in his Sefer on the Rambam, where he notes, looking at certain differences, that when we look at the prohibition, for example, of bathing, of rechitza on Tisha B'Av, so he brings proofs that it has to come from both. It has to be both a comparison to Yom Kippur and a comparison to Avelis, because he knows there's certain halachas that apply to one, don't apply to other, and they both seem to apply on Tisha B'Av, so therefore he has the whole thesis there. Mechas Chinuch has a different approach. If you look at Mechas Chinuch, it's a little complicated, I'm not going to go into the details, but the Briska Rav, diverging from the Mechas Chinuch, has a thesis there where he points out that you have to assume that bathing comes from both, comes from a comparison to Tisha B'Av, and comes from Avelis as well. Similarly, it could be that there was machlokis between the Talmudim, between the Talmud Bavli and the Talmud Yerushalmi, about how we characterize the prohibition of anointing with oils of Sicha on Tisha B'Av. Because there may be a debate, Yerushalmi says that on Tisha B'Av, one is permitted to anoint oneself if the purpose is lahavir zuama. If a person has a blemish on his skin, he needs to use oil to get it off. So it's not that he's enjoying himself with the oils. He's using the oil to get rid of a problem. So then the Yerushalmi says that's mutter on Tisha B'Av, which is not the case on Yom Kippur. So the Bavli lists differences between Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av and doesn't list this. So So some assume that therefore the Bavli does not agree that this is permitted on Tisha B'Av, and Yerushalmi thinks that it is. So the Macheshes was the Rebbe Vilna after Chaim Ozes, and Macheshes has a tshuva where he suggests that it's about this question as to what's driving these extra inuyim on Tisha B'Av. So is it comparable to Yom Kippur, so therefore we should follow Yom Kippur rules, like the Bavli not distinguishing, or is it about Avelos? When it comes to Avelos, so Avelos, we don't want the Avel to suffer, we want the Avel not to do things that are pleasurable. So if the oil is there to be pleasurable, so then we don't want the Avel to do that. But if it's there to address a problem, so then that would be mutter. That's what the that would be the model that would go to Tisha B'Av if that's the case. And in Kippur, Sicha is from something else. It's from the fact that the Gemara has the expression of Sicha Kishtia. Sicha is a derivative of drinking. So therefore, it's not necessarily an issue of what the purpose is. It's just considered like drinking and has a broader scope. So this question of how do we treat the rule on Tisha B'Av is also perhaps going to connect to this question. These possibilities are also illustrated in a question that was asked to Rav Haigon. There's a sefer that came out some time ago that collected a lot of the writings of the Gaonim in the order of Shas called the Otsar HaGaonim. So the Otsar HaGaonim in the Sefer Tainis quotes a discussion that Rav Haigon was asked by the Anshei Mitzrayim, the Egyptians, that maybe we should have a great kula when it comes to Tisha B'Av. Now we have a principle in Hilchos Avelos called Mixos Eum Kekulo. You know, Shiva literally translates as seven, but in practice, Shiva is almost never 7 times 24. It's never 7 full days. In terms of hours, it's closer to 5.5, because the first day of Shiva is very often very short. Whatever's left after the funeral is really until dark. And the last day of Shiva is even shorter. The last day of Shiva ends a few minutes after Shacharis, because we have a principle called Mixos Yom Kekulo. Some of the Rishonim thought it should end already at night. In practice, we don't do that. We end in the morning, but still very short. So this idea of Mixos Yom Kekulo, that when it comes to negative things, the whole discussion of what Mixos Yom Kekulo applies to, we tend to assume that it applies to negative things, accounting Tuma or accounting Avelos. We want it to end sooner, so we take the shortest version of the day. So the last day of Avelos, the seventh day, is only a small portion of the day. So I'm asking the client as well, why shouldn't we say the same thing by Tisha B'Av? So Tisha B'Av also, let's just sit for a few minutes in the morning and end it. That'll be a Gevaltika Hula, who will take things in a very different direction. So Rav Haigon had three approaches, three answers to that question, which represent three approaches we could have over here. One approach, he said, you're right, that on paper we should say Mixos Yom Kekulo by Tisha B'Av. Why don't we in practice? Because in practice we're already getting off easy. Because we've already established that really Tisha B'Av should be the 9th and the 10th. It really should be both days. So in practice we're not casting on the 10th also. We observe the 9 days until Chatzos of the 10th of Av. But we're not fasting on the 10th of Av, so we really got off easy as far as that's concerned. So maybe that's the answer to that. So really, you're right. It should be mixed in with the kulo, but it's already abbreviated because we only fast on the 9th, so that's enough. Second answer he gives is that, no, we're not going to apply mixed in with the kulo because it shouldn't apply, because it's about Avelos, and Tisha B'Av is not about Avelos. So therefore, the whole rule doesn't come in. The third answer he gives is that you're right and you're wrong, that it should apply, but it should only apply to part of Tisha B'Av, and we don't want to have a split observance, so therefore we're not going to have Mixos Yom Kekulo at all. And you might say we do have a little bit of a split observance, so we have differences after Chatzos in terms of sitting on chairs, things like that. Those are Minhagim. But as far as the real din and the real obligations of Tisha B'Av, we don't really distinguish. It feels like we distinguish a little bit, but in practice, it's only minor issues. The real halachas of Tisha B'Av don't stop in the middle of the day. So that was the third approach of Rav Haigon, that we don't want to have a split observance. So as the Soloveitchik noted, so what you find here is you find basically three different approaches to what's characterizing Tisha B'Av. First answer is that it's about Avelos, which is why Mixos Yom Kekulo should theoretically apply. Second answer is that it's not about Avelos, which is why it should not apply. And the third answer is the combination of both, and that's why it was half applying, and we're not going to apply it halfway. It's interesting on the other extreme to note that this whole time we've been saying that Tisha B'Av is a 25-hour observance. So what do we mean 25 hours? A day is normally 24 hours. So what's 25? Shabbos is also 25 hours in practice. Why do we do that? because really it's 24 hours, really should be a day. But we have the twilight zone, we have the time of Ben Hashmashos, which we're not sure how to handle that. The time between when the night starts, when the sun goes down, we call Shkia, until the time when it's fully night, when the stars are out, we call Tzeis HaKochavim. So that time is the twilight zone. We don't know if that's day or night. So the Gemara says in Shabbos, we treat that as a suffix. We treat that as something we're not sure about. So when it comes to Shabbos, Shabbos is an example of biblical law. We have to be machmer and a suffix. So therefore, on Friday night, we start at the beginning of this period. We started at Shkia. And on Saturday night, we ended at the end of the period. We ended at Tzeis, the latest possible time. We're machmer on both ends because we're dealing with biblical law. But it's not so obvious that that should be the case when it comes to Tisha B'Av. When it comes to Tisha B'Av, we're dealing with rabbinical law. So the Gemara raises the question, what should the story be when it comes to Ben Hashmashos of Tisha B'Av, the period, the twilight zone of Tisha B'Av? So how should we treat that? Should we say Ben Hashmashos Mutter, that we're allowed to eat during that time? Or should we say Ben Hashmashos Shalal Asher? The Gemara raises the question, do we treat Ben Hashmashos as subject to the prohibitions of Tisha B'Av? So in practice, as we know, so we treat it as 25-hour fast, we're machmer on this, as with the Rambam rules, that we say Ben Hashmashos Asim. So the whole discussion, the commentaries in the Rambam, so why do we say Ben Hashmashos Asim? Tisha B'Av is rabbinical law, maybe we should be lenient, maybe we should say it should be 23 hours, maybe we should start it at Tzeis and end it at Shkia. Different reason why we wouldn't end it at Shkia, but maybe at least we should start it at Tzeis. So the Magi Mishnah writes that, no, that's not how we treat it. We've mentioned here in the past that there is a concept called Divrei Kabbalah, which comes from the same Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that we started with, that the Gemara has an expression there referring to Divrei Kabbalah. Has nothing to do with mysticism, has to do with tradition. If we have a din, which really should be a din de Rabbanan, it's really invented by people, so really it should be considered a Rabbanan, but it's mentioned in Sukkim, it's in Scripture, not in Chumash, it's mentioned in the Nevi'im Uksuvim, so then that's called Divrei Kabbalah. And that Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that we mentioned before has an expression there, Divrei Kabbalah to Divrei Torah Dami. Divrei Kabbalah treated like Divrei Torah. So the Gemara is really saying in a very specific context. But the Tori Evan has a comment which had a lot of influence, even though the Rishonim who don't agree that Tori Evan had a louder voice. So the Tori Evan assumes that means for all intents and purposes, Divrei Kabbalah to Divrei Torah, that we're machmer in Divrei Kabbalah just like we are in Divrei Torah. So therefore, Tisha B'Av, which is mentioned in the Pasuk in Zechariah, and we find this, for example, in the mitzvahs of Purim as well, which are Drabanan, but are mentioned in Megillas Esther, so we're machmer on them also, a lot of poskim hold. So too, we should treat Tisha B'Av l'chomer. We treat it like it's a din d'oreis, so we're machmer like that. The Shlash Emes and others, though, is actually, the Rambam sounds like this from Perish from Mishnayis, so Shlash Emes has a whole different approach. Because why should we be machmer in the beginning of Tisha B'Av, starting it so early? We started early because of the din of Tosefes. And just like on Shabbos and Yom Tov, if we start early, Tosefes Shabbos, we have this idea. So Tisha B'Av also, we should start early. So it's interesting. Is that true? Is that appropriate that we should start Tisha B'Av early because of Tosefes? So it really, it should depend on what is Tisha B'Av about. If Tisha B'Av is driven by Avelus, so we don't have this attitude that we want to increase the time of Avelus. We take the opposite approach, like we just said, Nixi Yom Kukula, we try to keep it as short a time as possible. So if the idea is it's comparable to Yom Kippur, though, so it's interesting, Yom Kippur is actually the most explicit model for Tosefes. The most explicit in Chumash idea of starting early is that we start the fast of Yom Kippur early. So if that's the model for Tisha B'Av, so then it would make sense to carry that over to Tisha B'Av. So this question of whether Tisha B'Av should have a notion of Tosefes or not, which seems to relate to this issue. Is it about Avelus or is it about being comparable to Yom Kippur? Which may also relate to the question of chinuch, you know, how should we treat children in terms of training them for Tisha B'Av. In practice, we do assume that there's a concept of chinuch by children for Tisha B'Av, but they could relate to this question as well, because when it comes to Avelus, so we normally assume that there isn't the concept of chinuch for Avelus. A child, Rechmon Islan, is in a situation of Avelus, so we don't really assume they're obligated to observe Shiva. We don't want them to practice this particular hanaga, but when it comes to Yom Kippur, so we do have a concept of chinuch. We wait till they're strong enough, it's later years, but there is such a notion. So the question of how chinuch should relate to Tisha B'Av might be related to this. Might not also, because one could say there's a distinction between the private avelos and the public avelos. So in practice, may not make such a difference, but it could have a connection to this idea as well. I'll just mention one more idea. On Tisha B'Av morning, so the laning that takes place is from Parsha, we read Kisa Libanim. So that's different than every other fast day. Every other fast day we lay in the morning and afternoon, we read Vayichal both times. On Tisha B'Av we read Kisa Libanim in the morning and Vayichal in the afternoon. So Rav Zolfi, who was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim until around 30 years ago, wrote the Sefer Misnas Yavetz. So Zolfi raises the question, this Kriyas HaTorah that we have Tisha B'Av morning, so is that a tainus Kriyas HaTorah, like every other tainus we read Kriyas HaTorah, but we just, on Tisha B'Av we change the selection, but it's Kriyas HaTorah of the tainus like every other day, every other fast day? Or do we say, no, it's a Yontif Kriyas HaTorah. But in every Yontif we have a Kriyas HaTorah that is Me'ein Hayom, that is somehow appropriate for the day. So too on Tisha B'Av we have a Kriyas HaTorah because of its Yontif character. So what difference does it make? We'll call it one thing, we'll call it the other thing. What difference does it make? So the difference relates to a question that the Kiva Eger had. But the Kiva Eger has a tshuva, later the Macheshes wrote about this also, relating to the Kriyas HaTorah of the afternoon of Yom Kippur. So Yom Kippur afternoon we lane, and laning in the afternoon only happens two other times. It happens on Shabbos, and it happens on fast days. So why is it that we lane on Yom Kippur, and we don't lane on every other Yantif, so why is it that on Yom Kippur in the afternoon we lane? So we could say it's because it's Shabbos, and Kippur is Shabbos Sabashim, so therefore it's not grouped with Yom Tovim, it's grouped with Shabbos. Or we could say that, no, it's a tainus Kriyas HaTorah, that every other fast day we lane in the afternoon, so Kriyas HaTorah, Yom Kippur also we lane in the afternoon. It's not by Yichal, it's by Sarais, maybe it's the same type of idea, same kind of question that Zolti would later ask about the Tisha B'Av. Maybe we switch the selection, but maybe it's the same idea, we lane in the afternoon because it's the times. So what difference does that make? So who cares whether we call it one or we call it the other? So the Kiva Eger assumed that maybe it would make a difference if a person is not fasting. Let's say a person is eating on Yom Kippur. So if he's not fasting, so maybe if we can give him an aliyah for a mincha, it would depend on this question. But if it's a Yom Kippur laning, okay, so he's shaykh to Yom Kippur laning. But if it's a timeless laning, so maybe it's only going to be given, maybe aliyah should only go to somebody who is observing the times. So that was the basis of the result of this question about Tisha B'Av. So Tisha B'Av morning, when we lay in the morning, so is this a tainus Kriyas HaTorah, which should only give aliyahs to people who are fasting? Or is it Tisha B'Av Kriyas HaTorah, we can give aliyahs even if somebody's not fasting? So the truth is, the premise is a little bit shaky. It sounds a little bit questionable. Chassam Sofer has a tshuva about this, and Binyan Shin also has a tshuva about this. The whole notion that somebody is not fasting is not shaykh to the tainus and shouldn't get an aliyah, one could question that notion, because two reasons. One reason is that even when the person eats, so he's not, assuming if he's eating for legitimate reasons, the person is a chola, so then he's not going to party, he'll eat as much as he needs to stay healthy, but he's still inhibited by the fast day, he's still fasting in a sense, he's just eating as much as he has to stay healthy, and then beyond that he's fasting, so even if a person is eating, he could still be fasting. So to say that a person who is eating is not part of the tainus is not necessarily the case for that reason, as they point out. Also, even if he ate in the morning, or if he ate before this, so right now, when he's getting the aliyah, he's fasting right now. Okay, so he ate an hour ago, or he'll eat an hour from now, but right now he's fasting. Unless, you know, some forum discussed the question, somebody goes up wearing leather shoes. So that, you could actually not be fasting as you're getting the aliyah, but that's a rarer case. So chances are, even a person who's eating that day is not going to be eating, he's not going to come up to the Sefer Torah with a gum in his mouth, with a drink in his hand. So he's probably not eating right now. So therefore, even if he ate another time of the day, but right now he's fasting. So for those two reasons, this whole premise that there should be any exclusion is itself a little bit questionable. And the result, in his conclusion, so he thought that, especially when it comes to Tisha B'Av, there's more grounds to be makel. Because we could say that when it comes to Yom Kippur, there's really two aspects to the fast. There is a prohibition to eat during any moment of Yom Kippur. And there is also the concept of me'erev ad erev, kanos nashasechem, that the whole unit creates a concept of a fast day. So if somebody ate during any point of Yom Kippur, so maybe he's already losing out on this me'erev ad erev idea that he's missing this whole unit concept of Yom Kippur, so maybe that's some kind of flaw I shouldn't get in the way. But on Tisha B'Av, there's a little bit of speculation. On Tisha B'Av is Din Rabbanan, so we don't have any psukim telling us how to observe Tisha B'Av. So he assumes that it makes more sense to say that Tisha B'Av is an issue to eat, that they don't have a concept of any special status to the day, and fasting the whole day creates any kind of special reality. But rather, there's a prohibition to eat during all the minutes of Tisha B'Av. So therefore, if somebody's eating in different minutes of Tisha B'Av, the minutes during Kriyas HaTorah, he is still fasting during those minutes, and therefore his status should be the same as anyone else who is fasting all the other minutes as well. So for that reason, technically speaking, the result we thought there was chance to be equal in any event, but at least in theory, the question of how do we see the Kriyas HaTorah also, again, really goes to this issue of what is it that is driving Tisha B'Av. So Vaichal, I think the same question seem to apply. That Vaichal is more on a theoretical question doesn't apply. It's clear that Vaichal is driven by a tainus. And in practice, we do try to make sure that we have at least a majority of people fasting in order to justify the Kriyas HaTorah. But the svaris could apply as far as that. So there is this hesitancy, you know, based on this approach, but it's also been questioned. And there is reason to say that even something that's really about the timers, maybe they are fasting, even if they're not fasting right now. You know, sometimes we find, we do look for the whole idea that Nenu should only be recited in the afternoon when they're more confident people are fasted. It has varying applications. Hi. Six, what? Oh, in terms of the majority of the minion. But that actually gets into more, that concept you find in Rishonim and other contexts. It's really a whole separate topic. But in terms of just having a dominant presence within the minions, we find it by people who have davened already, things like that. Okay, so we're already out of time. So people who have davened already, Marv, you can listen to the Chazar, but it's not as Marv now downstairs. Just to quickly recap, so we spoke about this question of what is it that gives Tisha B'Av a special severity? And we mentioned the Gemara's idea of Chukh B'Lubo HaTzaris, two different ways in Tosfos to understand what that means. If a mikdash is more intense or something happening twice gives it a greater severity. We talked about the Ramban's theory that the Gemara says the fast days except for Tisha B'Av are optional, so therefore we've accepted them upon ourselves in a reduced format, and Tisha B'Av is the default. And then it's sort of arguing on that and saying, no, Tisha B'Av is not the default, Tisha B'Av is enhanced because of Avelus, and others saying it's enhanced because of its comparison to Yom Kippur as a reflection of negativity of the day. We mentioned how Rabbi Levine saw that in the two answers in Tosfos about why Tisha B'Av is special. And we saw also the whole discussion about Rebbe wanting to get rid of Tisha B'Av and Tosfos saying not really get rid of, just either make it reduced in severity or be on the 10th, even though the Gemara says that he wanted to push it off, he wanted to forget about it when it was pushed off to the 10th. So we mentioned the Avnei Shalom's explanation that he felt that Avelus really drives everything, so it should be on the 10th. His colleagues felt that it should mark the 9th of Av, should be on that day. So he said, according to you, it either shouldn't have such severity and it should not be portable. So that was what the whole debate was about. And then we got a little bit to the question of why is it on the 9th instead of the 10th. The Gemara says that even though most of the debates make this destroyer on the 10th, we picked the beginning of the disaster. And we talked about a little bit how Rabbi Yochanan might be at odds with his position here about fire being treated like an arrow. And we talked about the focus being on the damage rather than on the damager, and how that's also relevant to our whole attitude towards the morning on Tisha B'Av. And then we talked about how this could affect some aspects of the practice. The question whether Tisha B'Av is about Avelus or whether about the significance of the 9th of Av. For example, when the 9th of Av is Shabbos and we don't fast till the next day, is it that is Tisha B'Av, or is it Tisha B'Av completely moved over the next day? Affects the question of Bar Mitzvah, affects the question of Talmud Torah, the question of Bar Mitzvah boy who becomes a Mitzvah on the 10th of Av, and the question of when Shechal Bo is. And then we talked also about the question of whether Mitzvah of the Kulo should apply to Tisha B'Av, the question that was asked of the Anshei Yerushalayim, of the Anshei Yerushalayim to Haigon, the three answers. That either that applies where we're already getting off easy, or it doesn't apply because it's not about Avelus, or we apply halfway and we don't want to do that, reflecting three possibilities here. We talked also about the question of Ben HaShemashas of Tisha B'Av, that the Gemara asks whether it should be Mutar Asur, Ram Shaz Asur, and that's how we practice. The question is that because we're Machmel on the Safek, even though it's Rabbanan, because it's Divrei Kabbalah, or is it that we have a concept of Tosefesh, and that should perhaps depend on whether it's about Yom Kippur, whether it's about Avelus, and also that question, so also maybe, at least in the theory, affect the question of Chinuch. We talked about how the two possibilities could affect various inuyim, such as the inuyim of washing, as the Brisker Rav has his whole essay, or the question of Shicha, by the Machlokas, the thing that Bava Mirshalmi, about whether you can anoint yourself on Tisha B'Av to get rid of a blemish. And then we talked about this question of what is the status of Kriyas HaTorah in the morning at Tisha B'Av. Is it a Kriyas HaTorah of the Tainish, or is it a Kriyas HaTorah of the Yontif, so to speak, of Tisha B'Av? Comparable to Rabbi Yehuda's question about waning in the afternoon on Yom Kippur, and how that possibly could affect the status of somebody who's not fasting, if they get Aliyah or not. Now, we mentioned how the Chasam Sof and the Bnei Tzion question that, because there's various reasons why we should give such a person Aliyah, either because they are fasting even when they're eating, because they're still inhibited by the fast, or because they're fasting the other minutes of the day. And how Zolfi suggests in practice that Tisha B'Av seems to have even more grounds for leniency, because distinguished from Yom Kippur has the idea of the Erev at Erev, that the whole day creates a certain unit, and Tisha B'Av, as a Din Rabbanan, presumably has no such concept, rather has an idea that there's an Ishrit of fast during every minute, and that could perhaps give you more grounds to be doing it. Again, let's hope that this whole discussion was totally just theoretical, because God willing, there should be a gula between now and Wednesday, but if not, we should have an easy fast, and it should bring about the gula for next year. Sorry. Right. That could be a different concept. That we know is connected to the pasuk Karolai Moed. So this idea that Tisha B'Av has a Moed status, it's interesting that one could question whether that means that it's the future Moed potential that we find by all the Tanaishim. Or, as a strong possibility, maybe it's not about that maybe it is to do with something inherent in Tisha B'Av, that Tisha B'Av has its own Moed character, which is learned out from the Yoh statement, and therefore that is what impacts these dinim as shlichas, tafna, and things like that. Not necessarily because of its future flipping, but because it's something inherent in Tisha B'Av right now, which seems to be some pretty strong grounds to say that way as well. Maybe more like in Kippur. Maybe that's the idea, that recognize this as a Moed on the calendar, perhaps like in Kippur. Maybe that's especially if we say it's not dependent on it becoming Yontif, but it's reflective of what it is now, so maybe all the more so it follows the Yom Kippur model. Perhaps. Okay, should be an appropriate fast.